If a government were very strong, if a government felt very secure, if a government could see and was well upscale, it would employ the most peaceful, quiet methods of granting beingness and getting cooperation from its various enemies, potential enemies. It would square them up. It wouldn't fight a war. You don't find an educated, secure man fighting with all of his neighbors. No, the person who fights his neighbors is a very insecure, not at all sane man. No, to bring about peace, it is not enough to suppress and smash down every single government in the world. That's just a motion in the wrong direction. That's how wars are caused. I want to point out something to you, that after the bloodbath of the French Revolution, France was in continuous war for decades. In other words, she was fairly well at peace so long as she had a king and a fairly strong government. But when that government was turned over to Robespierre's and Danton's and Napoleon's, what did we have? We then had a continuous state of war. To have nullified the tremendous wasteful efforts of France and all the suffering which pursued those various wars, it would have been necessary to have bolstered the French government, not weakened it. And so long as every nation is upset about every other nation, and as long as every nation refuses to bolster and strengthen its neighbor nations, then war remains a threat. If the United States is willing to grant beingness to the various other great nations of the world, and if they are willing to grant beingness to her, if England is willing to grant beingness to the great nations, and their willingness to grant beingness to her, all of a sudden you will see a security mounting up which will make war practically impossible. But these countries are still doing something which is quite wrong, that is, they're weakening the government of Russia. The trouble with Russia is its government is weak. Its government was overthrown by revolution, and she's been a threat to world peace ever since. That revolution was a gaudy, rough thing. Should never have happened. But the conditions of Russia should never have happened either. In other words, the non-civilized condition of Russia, its unenlightened state, for the last many centuries, are the direct result of this threat we call Russia today. Now, nobody's saying that we ought to throw everything overboard and admit communism and all this sort of thing. The truth of the matter is, communism is a losing philosophy. It was invented in Germany and is a German philosophy. It was invented in Germany a century ago. And long after that, the Germans thought it was idiotic and threw it out. And now the Russian has come back and given to Germany communism, which Germany was already too grown up to accept. And they're not buying it. Germany's not buying communism. They recognize it for what it is. It's one of their old, discarded political philosophies. But regardless of any political philosophy, unless Russia and its satellites can prosper one way or the other, they will continue to be a have-not nation. Maybe these people are have-not people. Maybe like the Arab of the Middle East, it'll be impossible to bring them up to a point where they can't have. And if that is the case, then sooner or later we will find ourselves at war with Russia. But the answer to the atomic bomb does not lie in the field of there shall be no further development of the atomic bomb. You know and I know that if a war weapon exists, it'll sometimes be used. The answer to the atomic bomb lays in the change of status of man and his national governments. These governments must be stronger. People must cooperate with them better. They must be strengthened. And the peoples of those nations must be addressed realistically and brought up to a point where they can feel some security, where they can have something, where they can exist themselves at peace with their own neighbors. And only then have you whipped the problem of the atomic bomb. All the atomic bomb is doing is catalyzing the necessity for this solution. That is all it is doing, and our only interest in it really is that. If a technology exists which can bring a higher level of civilization to man, if such a technology exists, then that technology should be used to the uttermost to advance that state of civilization. It should not be used to destroy or decry governments. It should not be used to propagandize and pull the rug out from underneath those fellows who are trying. It should be used to bring about stronger governments, more secure governments, and more civilized populaces. We are at a turn of the road. We are lucky that we know what we know. We are very fortunate to know what we know. But we're at a turn of the road. Man before could almost afford to go on in a state of barbarism. He could almost afford to do so. Today he cannot. He cannot afford his bestiality. He cannot afford his inhumanity to his neighbors. For many reasons, not the least of which is that the next war is the last war. You really shouldn't worry about the next war. It'll be over in 20 minutes. But why not take a crack at making that war unnecessary? The electricity board is doing a wonderful thing just now. It is putting up some 47, I believe. It has just put up 47 new power stations. It's now putting up, I don't know the exact number, but I think it is 12 reactor stations. Now, there is a peacetime use of atomic fission, and Britain is the first to seriously dedicate itself to employing atomic fission to the assistance of man and his works. This is an interesting thing. This hasn't received no great publicity throughout the world. Why won't man buy a forward advanced step? Why must he always seemingly buy blood, destruction? It's an interesting thing that Britain, the leader in these reactor projects, is planning to use atomic fission to put hundreds of millions more kilowatts up and down the length and breadth of the land to light homes, run factories, and supply power, which has formerly been wanting. Where's the news story? Where's the news story? Maybe we have some vague whisper of this. But that's very newsworthy. That would be of great interest in the United States. It would certainly swamp some of these boys who say we've got to build more bombs. It would bolster the hand of those that say we should use atomic fission for peace only. And the news hasn't been released. But over here, the news hadn't been released that there are going to be maybe 50,000 congenital idiots in the next 10 years because of atomic radiation in the atmosphere. We don't have a good exchange of communication going on here, that's for sure. But it's very interesting that the electricity board is doing so well with this project. Maybe you ought to know that atomic fission can be used for peace and would not thereafter throw off a great deal of test elements and, you know, and gamma in the air and so forth. Do you know what this reactor project is all about? Would you like to hear a little bit of something about it? It's rather funny, by the way, my telling you about this, because it's a British project. But it has not been widely released. However, down in West One, the electricity board's offices down there, carry a tremendous number of billboards and bulletin boards and mock-ups of one kind or another concerning this particular project. It's not exactly been held quiet. Anyway, a reactor is simply this. It is a container, rather massive container, which will continue to contain such things as gamma, and into which is placed a small amount of radioactive material. If you just get an idea of a big garbage can up here. And then we put a little piece of radium, something like that, in it. You know, just nothing. Doesn't matter what. Uranium, they're liable to use almost anything. And then we've got that set there. Now we put the lid on it, and we bore a little hole in the side of it, and we turn an electronic machine gun on that little tiny piece of uranium, you know. And every time one of the electrons from the machine gun hits it, it knocks off a bursting particle. In other words, it causes a fission to occur, you see. Boom, bang, boom, bang. And every time one of these things goes bang, it generates heat. So now let's add to this garbage can inside of it a number of steam pipes. And then let's have a channel which goes over here to an ordinary steam engine and then returns the water back into the condensed pipes and system. See? Just an ordinary steam engine. And what do we have here? We have water coming back from the steam engine, going through this thing. The machine gun goes boom. The water's heated up by the little tiny explosion, which is very hot, and then goes over and runs the steam engine and condenses and comes back and runs past this little machine gun and the explosions and heats up again and goes through, and the steam engine, of course, drives an ordinary generator, and that goes to a transformer, and it goes onto the electric lines, and somebody up the line makes motorcycles. That's all one of those reactors is all about. It's one of the simplest uses you could put anything to. Actually, there's no danger of fission getting out of control because there's really not enough fuel present to do very much. It's very hot stuff. Now, you can bombard even lower-order elements and still get that, so we're not even dependent upon a continuous supply of uranium to make these fuel projects possible. Are you aware of the fact that up in Wales and so forth, you're running out of coal? We've been running out of coal for some time. It's been getting lower and lower. It's getting hard to mine economically. Well, they used to put the coal in the garbage can and put a fire under it, you see? And then the coal would burn, and it would heat the water, and it would go through and run the generators. Now, instead of putting the coal in the garbage can, we put a little bit of fissionable material in it, make sure that it fissions, and we get the same system. Got the idea? Now, what is an industrial system but a great deal of cheap power? And that's really all it is. People over here are worried about automation. They haven't seen automation yet. They haven't. They haven't seen automation yet. The American assembly line has barely made its bow. There's still a great many steps being taken by hand here. People are worried. They're afraid that this will throw people out of work. If people work, they must have something to buy. If you give them money, there must be something to buy with that money. That's a fairly great certainty. Otherwise, the money is no good. You know, money is just as good as you can buy something with it, and just as bad as you can't. And that's all money is. It's something that converts into product. And taxes, of course. And that's all money is. Supposing you had the workman's idea of a wonderful civilization, whereby everybody did piecework all by himself and was paid abundantly for it. What's he going to do with this abundantly for it? What's he going to do with this cash? Buy somebody else's piecework? Well, it isn't available because nobody else is moving fast enough to make enough piecework for this fellow to absorb. A workman ought to certainly have a radio. He ought to have a decent home. He ought to have nice furniture. His kids ought to be able to wear nice clothes. There ought to be good food on the table. There certainly should be something on wheels to take him places in this modern age. That's his idea. He believes this, whether he's Spaniard or a Frenchman or an American. I talked to all of them, and they all believe they should have these things. Look, if they don't get made, nobody's going to have them. And that seems to be a point he overlooks. Automation must be standing there. There must be something that can produce enough so that he can have enough. You know, the society is existing only on a small percentage of its workers. The potential workers in the society are being diverted in so many different directions on non-productive levels. Like, let's take war weapons. Anytime you build war weapons, you've just expended a worker, everything it takes to support him and everything else. You've got to have something like automation, machine production, in order to make up for that. And that takes fuel. That takes fuel. And if a nation is going to be successful, it's got to have raw products, fuel, and willing workers. Got to have all those three things. And if it's short on one of them, it won't get there. You know, I know South American nations that have more raw products and more fuel and less workers than it's easy to imagine. And they're in a state of barbarism. People are still running around in breech clouts carrying bows and arrows. They've got the fuel, but they don't have, and the raw product, but they don't have the willing worker. This willing worker is not there. All right, what about this fellow? What if all of the workmen of England became unwilling to work? What if all the workmen of America became unwilling to work? Supposing somebody killed their will, their enthusiasm about producing things. Supposing somebody made life so horrible or so arduous they didn't see any point in it anymore. You would then again see a barbarism. And we, in Scientology, enter that field rather easily. We take up the problems of work. And you should look over this new little book on the problems of work. You can orient somebody with regard to work and make him brace up to it and have a good time with it, whereas he's been ducking it before. The Anglo-American Society, if anything kills it, will die either under tremendous political blunders which bring about an atomic war, or this philosophy of work is too hard to confront. This philosophy of we must all be retired someday. This philosophy is our greatest ambition is to do nothing. You know that that is a gag somebody pulls on you. If you don't believe that, sometime when you're auditing a preclear, I have him mock up somebody and deny him the right to work. Mock up somebody and deny him the right to work. Mock up somebody. And he says, I've been doing this. This is a dreadful thing to do. It's a gag people pull on each other. Somebody's having a good time. He's always doing something or other. He's building a birdcage or something. And somebody comes up and says, aren't you tired? You're working so hard. I should think after a long day at the office, you would be worn out and would be incapable of going on any further. What are you doing building a birdcage? That's the way it goes. Next thing you know, he goes to the office and somebody says something cutting to him about his work, you know, or something like that, and says, why didn't you add up those ledgers frontwards instead of backwards? And he says, you know, work makes me tired. All tiredness is willingness gone bad. People who are willing don't get tired. It's only when something makes them unwilling that they become exhausted. I could have somebody enthusiastically opening doors, you know, opening doors, opening doors, opening doors, opening doors, and then all of a sudden fix it so the doors wouldn't open, you know, and they go, and all of a sudden they're tired. So you say, well, they opened doors 222 times and that made them tired. Oh, no, it didn't. They opened doors 222 times and that made them feel pretty good. But the time they didn't find themselves able to open the door, tired them out. Not only is he unwilling to open the door, but he's unable to do so. And he becomes exhausted. So people have to be told, and people have to stay in the frame of reference, that life is worth living and that things are worth doing. And if governments and civilizations continue to produce things to convince them that they are just slaves, that things are not worth doing, that they have to be pushed into it, that it requires a whip, when they fill the atmosphere full of little wiggly things that are going to bite their kids, you know, when they don't give them adequate health treatment, when they don't have adequate parks to walk into, when the schools aren't good and the education isn't good, and when they're told that there's no future for you, you're not going to open that door. Not just the workmen, but the whole society goes with the boards. The whole society. No society can exist upon a fabric of slaves. A society can survive only when built on the piers of willing men. Governments should take this into account. They, to some degree, do take it into account. Social Security, health programs, but they could take it into account more. The things I'm talking to you about in this hour are really more important than radiation. Wiggle wiggles that go through the air and bite your left ear. Man's inhumanity to man has always been present. And he has always been able to reach over and put his hand on a deadly and diabolical weapon. Whether that weapon was a club with a knot on the end of it, or a tower musket, or a new high-powered super-velocity bazooka, or a missile that guided an atomic bomb in at some tremendous velocity. Remember this, it was handled by a man who was being inhuman to men. Therefore, a solving of the atomic bomb would not prevent atomic warfare. We have to enter this at our own reality, our own level, in an area that we understand. And that is to say, man can be, and can be made to be, by our technologies, more civilized than he is, happier than he is, more capable of advancing than he has been. That is our target. We're going all too slowly in that direction. That's because, to some degree, we consider ourselves bucking the powers that be. Now, we shouldn't be ever considering that. You'll find that a government will always accept a helping hand. But it is so scarce that it takes them a long time to be convinced it's being held out. Remember that. They will always accept a helping hand, but so few people help the government that they don't really know what the hand is out for. Men use governments to feather their own nests and better their own ends. But there are sincere men in government, and there are men in government trying to do what is right. Now, if we wish to go in any direction in the field of politics, God forbid, let's be sure that we go in the direction of giving the government and the powers that be a hand in bringing about a higher level of civilization and a better understanding of things. Otherwise, we will not have struck at these intermediate, tiny problems, such as the A-bomb, smallpox, bubonic plague, and all the rest of the oddities that confront men as his enemies. Now, what do we have, then, in Scientology? We have something which assists man, not something that fights his enemies. Man will fight his real enemies. He isn't fighting them now. That means that we are going out and fight his enemies for him. What are we, a bunch of mercenaries? Are we going to fight the A-bomb? Is the only people fighting the A-bomb? Are we the only people who are going to fight smallpox? Doing this all for man and sort of letting him sit there in the stew pot and do nothing? No, our job is to buck him up to a point of where he can confront these things. And if we can do that on a very broad level, as we are doing it in a smaller sphere, then we will have brought a better civilization to Earth. And that, I think, is what we're trying to do. I hope you agree with me. Thank you.